Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The US President Joe Biden is in London today, where he'll meet UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. This is ahead of a NATO summit in Lithuania later this week. And the visit comes after several allies questioned Joe Biden's call to send cluster bombs to Ukraine, among them the UK and Canada. Rishi Sunak has not directly criticised his US counterpart, but on Saturday he said that the UK was one of 123 countries signed up to the Convention on Cluster Munitions, which is an international treaty which bans the production or use of the weapons. Well, to get a sense of how this is being received in Ukraine, I'm joined on the line from Kyiv by The Guardian foreign correspondent Luke Harding. Luke, thank you very much for taking our call this morning. In Europe, the focus is very much on whether the United States should have made the decision at all to send those cluster bombs to Ukraine. But what is the feeling like on this issue where you are?
Yeah, morning, Claire. Actually, totally different. I mean, the Ukrainian view is that they want cluster munitions, they need cluster munitions, and without further military assistance from the West in the form of munitions, heavy tanks, warplanes, and so on, that little prospect of driving the Russians out from their territory. And you have to understand the context, which is that Ukraine launched a big counteroffensive about a month ago, and I'm just back from the front line in the south, and it's making slow progress. I mean, they've advanced 5 or 6 kilometers perhaps in the last few weeks, and they're up against a very entrenched Russian army with minefields, with helicopters, with planes, and so on. And so basically they say they need these munitions to push forward.
Yeah, and Joe Biden told CNN that it was a difficult decision, but he had eventually acted because the Ukrainians are running out of ammunition. Is he right?
Well, broadly he is right. I mean, they're burning through about 110,000 shells a month. And you just have to go to the front line and you hear the kind of constant boom and rumble of outgoing Ukrainian artillery. There are drones involved. It's a very kinetic war with both sides using huge resources. And the problem for the Ukrainians is that the Russians, the gap with the Russians is perhaps smaller than it was more than a year ago when Vladimir Putin launched his full-scale invasion, but it's still quite big. I mean, the Russians simply have more. They've got more artillery, certainly more tanks. And so I think Volodymyr Zelensky, who's going to be in Lithuania, in Vilnius, at the NATO summit, I mean, he wants NATO membership for Ukraine, which I think is not going to happen. But he also wants more munitions and really the sort of debate about whether.
Okay, our line to Luke seems to be failing a little bit. Luke, the line is just popping in and out a little bit, but we'll try to keep going. People will understand that you're there in Kyiv, and sometimes the communications aren't as easy as they might be. I just want to talk to you a bit about cluster bombs themselves and the concerns around them. Will you explain what they are and how exactly they work?
Well, I mean, it's a shell which has got hundreds of deadly bomblets, tiny bomblets, which are then scattered over a very large area. And the problem is that they don't immediately all go off. And so that the fear in London, in Dublin, in New York is that civilians down the road, you know, many months from now will pick them up and be blown up, killed, wounded, maimed. Those are, you know, really very justified fears. That the problem is the Russians have been using cluster munitions from the beginning of the invasion, including on built-up areas, cities like Kharkiv, where they've been dropping them on crowded residential areas. So there's no kind of easy solution. I mean, cluster bombs are clearly horrible, but the Ukrainians say they'll use them responsibly and only use them against Russian troops.
Have they had access to them before now?
Well, they have a few from Soviet stocks, and there's been some kind of debate as to whether they've used them, for example, against the city of Izum in the northeast, which has now been liberated, but where there was a huge battle last spring. Human Rights Watch last week suggested the Ukrainians had used cluster munitions. But the defense minister here, Alexei Reznikov, put out a statement saying they would log where they used them, they wouldn't use them on Russian territory, and when they won the war, which I think is still some way off, that they would make it a priority to demine all of those areas.
Mm-hmm. So they've got no objection to using them in the first place. And did the Ukrainians go so far as to welcome this decision by the United States?
They absolutely did. I mean, this is as part of the latest kind of security package by the Biden administration. I mean, it totals about $800 million. And Volodymyr Zelensky, who's had an extraordinary few days visiting liberated Snake Island. He's been in Poland. He's been in Turkey. I mean, he is very effusive about this. But actually, what I think is really needed for Ukraine to be able to sort of turn this around is essentially something bigger. It's tanks and it's aviation. I mean, so far, F-16 jets for Ukraine has been discussed, but you don't see them. They haven't arrived, and it's not clear even if they will arrive.
Mm-hmm. But these cluster bombs, will they make a material difference, notwithstanding what you just said about what is actually needed?
The other thing, of course, the Russians have more of is troops. We're talking about perhaps 180,000 Russian troops who are dug in, but both in the east of the country and the south, where I was recently, and they've got these massive fortified positions. They've got trenches reinforced with concrete. They've got minefields and so on. And I think that the hope from the Ukrainian side is by using cluster munitions, they'll actually be able to kind of push through and break Russian that's eluded them. And if the counteroffensive is to succeed, sooner or later, this has to happen.
Mm-hmm. The counteroffensive has been pretty muted up to now, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, but not through lack of kind of effort or ingenuity by the Ukrainian side. I mean, just a few days ago, I was with a kind of drone unit sitting under some shady trees. They launched a reconnaissance drone, flew it at 1 kilometer above the ground. We saw on a kind of console in front of me, we saw Russian soldiers getting out of a car. And then after about sort of 10 minutes, the drone had to turn back because the Russians had jammed it. And this is the problem. They're fighting against a monster in the form of the Russian army. I mean, it may be a bit stupid. It may be sometimes slow, but it's enormous and it's still powerful. And, you know, my sense is, having reported on this war for more than a year and a half, that really, it's not going to finish this year. And I think we've got quite a long way to go.
And it hasn't made any difference what happened with Prigozhin and his Wagner mercenary group and the revolt that we saw that was settled very quickly. It was a strange event over a weekend very recently. That hasn't made, from what you're saying, Luke, any material difference to what the Russians are trying to achieve.
Well, I mean, I think what has not happened is we haven't seen a collapse of the kind of Russian command system, similar to what took place last autumn, when certainly in the northeast of the country, around the city of Kharkiv, the Ukrainians made astonishing rapid gains. I mean, over a period of about 6 or 7 days, they took back a territory the size of Wales. Instead, it's been more incremental. It's been slower. It's been harder. The Ukrainians have been very wary about taking huge casualties, unlike the Russians. It's been slow going. I mean, I was talking to one commander last night who is still relatively optimistic. I mean, there's a sort of feeling here that if the Ukrainians hammer Russian logistics, weapons dumps, control centers, take out tanks, fuel supply, and so on, that there will be a breach. But when that happens, we just don't know.
And they must be fearful, the longer this goes on, that the support from their allies might just wane. And, you know, when we have conversations now at the NATO summit around whether these cluster bombs should be supplied or not, you could look at that and take that as an indication of what might come if this war continues, as you say, into late this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a kind of political unfolding kind of political worry here that sooner or later the Western allies who've been very stalwart. I mean, we've seen an unprecedented international coalition, including Ireland, in support of Ukraine, that they may sort of start peeling off or grow tired, or that their own stocks of hardware are completely exhausted and run down. And of course, the other great worry is Donald Trump's return in 2024 if he wins the U.S. presidential election. I think Kiev understands that U.S. military support will cease pretty rapidly. So there are all these anxieties, but I don't think that's happened yet. I mean, I think for now, actually, the Europeans, the Brits, the Irish, the Americans are united in saying that they're going to stay the distance. They're actually going to give long-term support to Ukraine. But I think next year will be a crunch year and all eyes will be on the US presidential election.
Luke, thank you very much. Luke Harding, Guardian foreign correspondent, joining us from Kyiv in Ukraine this morning. Now, I just want to remind you that we have dentist Caroline Robbins. She'll be with us shortly. We're going to be discussing the delays in accessing free dental checks for primary school children. But Caroline is also going to give advice on some of the common issues for that age group when it comes to their dental health. So if you have any questions about brushing or fillings or flossing or the fissures, the seals that are sometimes offered to young children, any questions relating to primary school children and their dental health, do get in touch now. The number is 51551, or you can email the programme todaycb@rte.ie.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.